We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? You are hearing my voice because Ty has a super secret day job that probably has him, I don't know, spying on rogue governments or wiretapping crown princes. I can't say, but just know that those things aren't not accurate. So when I have the controls, when I have the steering wheel, when the rudders listen to me, I just bring on the largest Oregon duck I could possibly find. And he also happens to be really fun and smart and insightful and does all sorts of things regarding football, both college and pro. Jeff Schwartz, my friend, how are you?
I am glad to be here. So Ty has a secret job that no one even knows what it is. That's fantastic.
He has a secret day job. He's had it for a long time. He is very sensitive about it. People have asked us and him for years what it is. And out of respect for the job, just listen to that closely. He refuses to tell people what it is. Someday, if he ever moves on, I know he's very happy at his job, he might divulge it. But for somebody like you who has seven jobs, for somebody like me who does three or four different things, it's funny that he is in that position. But you know what? Jeff Schwartz is secretly one of the most entertaining, fun, smart people. He actually has a podcast called Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You with our friends Gabe and Matt, correct?
Yes, it is. It's still happening, I think. I don't know, the sports world is all over the place, but yeah. It's there. We had an episode Tuesday. I don't know what the future holds, but it's available on iTunes.
It's a fantastic lesson, and we're going to get into why Jeff is fascinating and incredible. I just have texts with friends who also know Jeff, and we all bask in the wonder that is Jeff Schwartz. But we're here.
Oh, interesting.
First off, yeah, the Matt Ford conversation. Matt Ford is deeply in love with you. We're talking about the NFL draft first and foremost, and then we're going to talk just about life in quarantine as a dad, as a husband. So, you know, just really get to know each other in that way. The draft was now a week ago. I think yes. It played out in a somewhat expected way. I'm not a huge NFL fan. You span the two worlds. So what I want to ask you first and foremost, was there anything about this year's draft or this year's draft coupled with previous drafts that reflects something, I guess, specific about where college football is, either as a whole or with certain systems or schools, whatever you want?
So I think that we're seeing now how important speed is, especially in the NFL, but on college football, where we have a ton of wide receivers. I mean, next year's class for wide receivers might be better. And this was like an historic year for wide receivers, right? Like there's speed, yeah. In my opinion, speed at cornerback, trying to protect, trying to defend those guys. And then also speed at, at the wide receiver position. is the name of the game. It's how fast can you be?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the continued domination of the draft from the SEC. I mean, you know, we're Pac-12 guys. We're just behind. We're behind in the big bodies in the offensive defensive lines. I mean, they are lapping us. The SEC is in those positions. And then lastly, now this might not be something to look forward, you know, to look at moving forward, but this was a supremely deep year. Like, we had a year where pick 50 was Jalen Johnson. I mean, he's an immediate starter for the Bears. Like, he's an immediate upgrade at that position. It just was a deep draft. I'm not sure that's a college football thing for next year, but I definitely think the wide receivers, like the speed, guys are just playing wide receiver now. They're not playing cornerback. They're not playing running back, especially. Playing wide receiver, and then the SEC just continues to dominate. That's why they win the title all the time. It's because they're just more talented. And we're getting to a point in college football. We're not getting there. We're there when you really can't like out coach someone to a championship. Like, you have to have dudes to win. Like, there's no way about it now. Like,
right.
Like, you can't like have a great season where you kind of luck into it. You better have years and years, 3, 4, 5 years of top 10 recruiting classes to even be competitive on the national level.
So you mentioned the SEC, and really I think it goes for a lot of the teams atop the sport, which happens to be a lot of SEC teams. If you look at that first round, even the first couple rounds, the picks overwhelmingly come from the known powers of college football, and probably, understandably so. Whereas if you look at successful NFL players, sure, there are certainly SEC alums at the top of the sport, but it's, you get a pretty wide swath.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce went to Cincinnati. Kareem Hunt went to Toledo. I guess maybe draft smaller school Ohio players. But no, you see, you know, DeForest Buckner just got the second highest defensive contract of all time, right? And he goes to Oregon, a power, but not in the SEC. Do you think it's a trust thing that scouts and GMs have with the SEC? Do you think it's a visibility thing? Do you think it's a distrust of perceived competition level? Is it something else? Or what makes it so much easier, even though eventually talent is pretty spread out?
So that's a good question. I think that because the SEC is just so much, I think, just more advanced in general, like the way they play, the players they have. I think defensively, they're much more advanced than other conferences. When you watch someone succeed in the SEC, you think to yourself, okay, look, he's succeeding in a conference that has great talent around him.
Sure.
And therefore, there should be good pros. And I think that is something that is definitely, you know, we look at and say, yeah, like, that's why I think a lot of these players end up getting drafted so high. And again, it's not a slight against them. I mean, they should be drafted that high because they performed, you know, at the SEC. But you look at, I'm trying to find the tweet now, but you look at like Alabama, for example, and they are so good. And just in general, like, they're just an incredible place. They just churn out pros and pros and pros that I think at some positions, like quarterback, it ends up being quote unquote like easy, right? And I think we get to the NFL, it's not as easy. I think from like the 2018 Bama team, like, there's like 11 first round draft picks on offense. It's just like outrageous. Like, it shouldn't be like that easy in college. And so I think that's why you get to, an issue in the NFL of like, it's just not as easy. It's not as easy as it was at Alabama. Not as easy as it was at LSU. Joe Burrow is going to be throwing to less talented wide receivers in Cincinnati than he did at
LSU.
Other
than AJ Green. AJ Green's still there, right? Is that a thing?
Yeah, AJ Green, I think, is still there. And T. Higgins is going to be good. But,
right.
You know, but basically, I mean, in theory, I mean, okay, for example, Tua is 1,000% throwing to worse talent and worse talent offensive line than he has at Alabama.
So do you think, and I'm actually curious about this because you bring up Alabama and Nick Saban, and I'm sure you watched the Bill Belichick, Nick Saban HBO thing. And in that, Nick Saban talks about scouts reaching out, GMs reaching out, or really not reaching out. And he had a sort of a comment that said, you know, nobody called me about this guy. I would have told you not to take him in the first round. How many coaches are allegedly that honest? Because the more first round picks a school produces, the better for recruiting, the better for that coach's reputation. Is there an honesty level there?
Yeah, I think there actually has to be, because if you tell a pro coach or scout that an X player is much better than he is, or, you know, his attitude issues aren't a problem, or he's a great leader when he's not, and right. he gets the NFL and he's not those things, then your butt's kind of on the line there. Like, you know, how much can someone trust your opinion if you can't give it to them straight? And so while I agree that you have to balance, you know, wanting your guy to go in the first round, but you also just kind of can't make things up to NFL personnel, because then you kind of look foolish, and then they're just not going to ask you.
Trust you less.
Yeah. I'm not saying, and I don't think Nick Saban's done this, but I do think coaches are fairly honest when it comes to behind the scenes private conversations with other coaches.
And if you walk in the Alabama facility, and I don't think I'm making this up, I think this is a thing, they will splash out in front for recruits how many dollars Alabama players have made being drafted high, signing those second contracts. So it's not like he's shying away from that element, but also they are going to be honest, because at a certain point, everybody can call BS once you see it on the field.
Exactly. And that's why it was actually surprising that people had not called Nick Saban for a lot of the right. draft picks. I feel like that was always something that people did. I do think there's something to, like, you know, the Alabama players just seem beat up when they get to NFL. It's just it's rough in the SEC. It's rough in Alabama. They put some tough football there.
Will that work against, I mean, we see it with running backs. We're like, oh my God, he has 800 carries in his career. And we've seen running backs that do get drafted somewhat high. I think Josh Jacobs, you know, doesn't have a lot of carries at Alabama, but he showed his talent. Do we see that in other positions where snap counts are saying, God, this guy played a lot of center, a 4-year starter is a lot of tread on his tires. Is that working against other positions the way it does maybe against running backs?
No.
Should it?
No, I think, like, for offensive line, you know, experience is important. And if you played that long and you haven't gone hurt, that's obviously a plus. But I think the running back position is so injury prone that it does yeah. play a role. Now, I mean, example from this year is Tua. I mean, Tua, the injuries that Tua had, it's a lot, guys. I know Dolphins drafted him, and they did a great job, I think, smokescreening a lot of people. I talked to someone with the Dolphins, and I still think they liked Herbert, but obviously they went with Tua.
Yeah.
But that guy's, it's a lot of injuries. It's a lot of injuries for a high draft pick to already have that position, which is typically a position you don't get injured very often. I mean, Joe Burrow, but that, I mean, maybe, you know, a small injury here and there. Herbert just had a collarbone 1 year. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no other, you know, Jordan Love wasn't hurt. You know, Eason obviously transferred a bunch around, wasn't hurt. Fromm wasn't hurt. And Tua had a dislocated hip, 2 ankles, a finger, a wrist, whatever the other injuries he had. It's a lot, guys. And I know it scared off teams.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I want to talk about Justin Herbert for a second, because he means a lot to both you and me.
Yes.
I like to think of myself as somebody who likes to, and hopefully correctly use the phrase, at a certain point. Whereas we hear about quarterbacks with 3 different coordinators, 4 different coordinators, or a new system every year, or, you know, there are excuses. There are built-in excuses that sometimes resonate and sometimes seem a little bit hollow. You know, we know these quarterbacks. We, you know, Christian Hackenberg, Josh Rosen, they have all these coordinators. And the same is true for Justin Herbert. And there was criticism from me, from you, from, this is all public, published from NFL scouts, both with their names and without their names, that the system at Oregon held him back. Do you think, what is legitimate and not a player's fault, and what is sort of BS? Because we see when guys actually get to league that sometimes those concerns were warranted.
Yeah, I think with Herbert, the coordinator issue is not as pronounced as other times in a quarterback's career, because his issue was never not knowing what to do, right? It was just that he didn't pull the trigger. But people look at his sophomore season and they say, wow, he like, if you look at like Pro Football Focus, they say sophomore season was his highest graded season, right?
Right.
And but yeah, he played with Willie Taggart, who is known to have a high tempo, high flying explosive offense. Like that's right. What he's always now. Florida State aside, obviously, but when he came to Oregon, South Florida for like 2 years in a row had the most explosive offense in the country.
Right.
The most explosive plays in the pass game. So, you know, when you take that into context, you look at the offense he plays in, played in, I guess, now at Oregon, almost the exact opposite, right? It was run the football first, or take two or three shots a game, throw a ton of screen passes, and the offense did not fit what Justin is really good at. Now, the anticipation issues are real. Like he there's times when he sees a guy open, he just does not throw the ball. Now, whether right. or not – whether or not that's because he just is afraid of making a mistake, which I think is very obvious at times, or guys just take a while to get open. There are plenty of times Justin is just staying in the pocket tall, waiting for someone to get open because the wide receivers have not been drafted. They're not good. The last right. 2 years, he's not had a guy drafted. Can you say about Burrow had five guys drafted?
And the Biletnikoff Award winning receiver last year. Yeah.
Like Tua's gonna have every wide receiver, tight end, running back he played with, every left tackle, every right tackle is going to be drafted into the NFL. Herbert did not have that luxury at the skill position players. Offensive line, obviously, very good. So all of it plays a role in how we evaluate Herbert. The question becomes, obviously, are the issues he has with anticipation, are they able to be fixed in the NFL? And that's obviously something the Chargers have to figure out. The other stuff that I heard about...
By the way, can it be? Do you see quarterbacks get anticipation issues fixed once they get there?
Generally speaking, I don't think so.
Okay.
But I think with his situation specifically, he's had... I just want to, like, the Senior Bowl was fine. And I know it's a small sample size, but the right. Senior Bowl was a time when he finally played with anyone who was any good and played a lot better. I think he can do it. He's going to be an outlier probably if he's able to do that. And I'm higher on Herbert than most are. A couple of things that I just did not understand the criticisms about Herbert. One is the leadership stuff. I'm, you know, you talk to the same people I do.
Yeah.
That was never a problem at Oregon. I tried to find someone to tell me it wasn't. The other one I don't understand is the it factor. So what's interesting about how we evaluate quarterbacks is, you know, quarterback A runs for a touchdown. Oh my God, greatest thing ever. What a winner, right? Quarterback B, not allowed to run for 10 weeks of the season, finally allowed to run, has three touchdowns in the Rose Bowl, doesn't have the it factor. What? What? What do you mean? What do you mean? He won the Rose Bowl for the team.
Yeah.
I went and watched the Rose Bowl the other day. I want to watch Penei Sewell for a little bit, the left tackle of Oregon.
Obviously.
And Wisconsin, I would say, played better than Oregon at times. Like Oregon should not have won that game. It was just we won because Justin Herbert played really well as a runner, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like that type of stuff, it's like, what? That's not true. We're looking like at the same thing. How do you even have the it factor? So I think some of it legitimate. I think some of it was just people making stuff up to knock him down.
Outside of quarterback, where does football intelligence and instincts matter most position-wise?
Well, I mean, offensive line is a huge one, obviously. I mean, you have to be able to play fast and play with a knowledge of what's happening around you. Mm-hmm. But I also think on defense, safety is a very instinctual position. You have to be able to kind of understand what's happening in the pass game, what your pass rush is going to be, how much time you have, what route concepts that you're seeing in front of you. The last position I want to say that I think doesn't get enough credit, and in college football, it's never going to get credit because it's not really as valuable as the NFL, but tight end is an extremely what's the right word to use?
Like cerebral?
Cerebral position. Because think about this. If you're the tight end, you have to know the entire passing game tree, right? Because you are a route runner.
Right.
You also have to know all the formations because you're either going to be in the right or left. You're going to motion across. You're going to shift across. And then you have to know all the run game as well because you're part of the run game. So you have to know all these three parts of the offense. A wide receiver just has to know where they line up and what route they run, right? Offensive lineman, I have to know the run game, and sometimes I have to know formations. A running back doesn't have to do the route tree that a tight end does. So tight end is a position, those who play really well, they got to do a lot of different things. And I think that that position is not as important in college, but really underrated as far as the intelligence that is needed to play that position at a high level.
So what I'm hearing is, even though Gronk and Travis Kelce come across as goofballs, secretly intellectual on the field.
Gronk is not. Yeah, Gronk is I think very bright. I think his party nature and his free spirit really deter from actually how bright he really is.
Two things can be true at once. Always remember, he can enjoy partying and knowing an offense and executing it well. Is there a position that is, well, I guess, what is the most unprepared position? No matter how good you are in college, no matter how well you know the playbook, no matter how good your instincts are, what is just the steepest position to climb with the challenges of the NFL?
Well, I mean, a quarterback's the easy one, I think. Right?
Yeah, I guess outside of quarterback as well.
We're
just the speed, intellect, yeah.
I would probably say offensive line. I mean, I think, and I'll use Penei Sewell as an example. I'm watching him. He's 2021, is probably the top tackle.
Yeah.
With the Allen Trophy winner. I watched him play Wisconsin the other day. He had three times that he had just an actual like 3rd-and-8 drop back pass set where he had a straight rush.
Right.
He was one-on-one. It was Zach Bond, the kid who got drafted by the Saints. Saints, I think. Yeah, he got beat in the first one. Not beat's kind of the wrong word. Second one, he was fine. Number 41 was other one. He like that was it. Three reps. Now he had other pass protection. He had play action pass. He had some where guys moved and shifted on him and whatnot. But three actual reps of a one-on-one pass rush. He'll have 25 to 35 of those in an NFL game.
Wow. Yeah.
And that is the big difference, in my opinion, when you see college offensive linemen go in the NFL. You just have to, you pass protect more. And a lot of these offenses in college aren't built quite like you see in the NFL. And that's a tough transition to make. I think with Oregon's new offense, they're going to end up having more of those dropback pass attempts. But
right. He
didn't get the opportunity to really work on what he's going to do in the NFL. And that's why the transition at times from the NFL, from college to the NFL, is so hard at the offensive line position.
And hi, it's not a guy from ASU or Cal, it's Khalil Mack.
Yes, and that's one thing that is, you know, people ask me the biggest difference between college and NFL, and that's the exact answer I give them. I'm like, when I was in college, I played USC, USC's defensive end, which was, Lawrence Jackson, and then that was it.
That was it.
I mean, there was one guy, UCLA, Bruce Davis or something.
Yeah, that's a name.
Drafted at some point. One of my favorite name of all time, Ropati Pituatu, at Washington State, but he's a defensive tackle. I didn't really face him very much in college as far as, pass rush wise. And then Nick Reed at Oregon. I mean, like, but not
NFL. Yeah. Not an NFL player.
That's it. So, in NFL, you obviously face NFLers every week. And that's just a huge difference. I mean, Penei Sewell in his time in Oregon, the best pass rusher he's probably going to play is on his own team. Otherwise, he's not going to get a lot of guys in the conference, especially that are even remotely close to pros.
How many years did you play?
8.
You played 8 seasons. Your brother is in what number season?
He just finished 8.
He just finished 8. Okay. So your brother's taken in the 2nd round. Mitchell Schwartz, all-pro right tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. You're taken in the 7th round.
Yes.
I assume if coaches had a crystal ball and they said, this guy will be an 8-year player, he will be an 8-year NFL offensive lineman, you would probably be taken higher than the 7th round.
Correct.
And Mitch, if everybody knew he were all pro caliber, would have been taken higher than the 2nd round. What do you think, and let's get extremely personal, what do you think it's overlooked about you, about Mitch, about any offensive lineman who outplays his draft rank?
Oh, it's athletic traits.
Okay.
People are obsessed with those. I have an example for this year. I know I'm sticking to Oregon a bunch because I watch him all the time. But Calvin Throckmorton, the Oregon right tackle, every time I watch him play, guess what he does? He blocks the guy in front of him. Like, that's his job. And he does it extremely well. He didn't allow a sack in his college career.
Right.
He got beaten a couple times. But like, he runs a 5.4, and doesn't have the greatest shuttle. And we look at athletic traits and we value them way too much instead of just, does the guy block someone? And it's that simple. And I think that's the way, even sticking out west, Bradley and I, the pass rusher out of Utah, 5th round draft pick, he was Utah's all-time sack leader. Like, he should have been a third round draft pick. It's a high, low second round draft pick. Are you kidding me? But you know, doesn't run as fast. It's like, it's ridiculous. We obsess over athletic traits, and that's why I think I was drafted lower than I probably should have been. I don't think I was at all anything higher than a maybe fourth round draft pick. My brother was actually drafted higher than I think we thought he would. I thought we were kind of middle to end of second round, not start of the second round.
Right.
And you know, he was a little more athletic than me. Actually, his combine numbers are a little worse if you kind of grade them all together. I have one thing over my brother. He has the Super Bowl and the four All Pros. But I think that's what it is. It's his athletic traits.
So what I'm hearing is you are blaming Mr. and Mrs. Schwartz. You are blaming your parents for costing you and possibly Mitch countless millions of dollars.
But if you go look at Mitch's contract situation, I'm not sure that there's that much to be upset about.
That's true. He did earn a very nice second contract from Kansas City. Okay, I'm going to stick with grading here because that's about all I care about with the draft. Just because I don't have an NFL team, I don't watch a lot of the NFL. Sundays are for a lot of college football stuff for me after week whatever. How would you grade yourself as both a husband and father? Pros, cons, strengths, weaknesses during this extended quarantine. Give me a scouting report for you as a household presence.
Okay, so this is going to sound a little bit. I don't even care. I don't make any bones about having money. So
yeah.
I when this started. When the COVID-19 coronavirus kind of became a thing in early February, I kind of felt the direction we were going. And I know my strength and weaknesses as a husband and as a dad.
I'm hearing anticipation right off the bat.
Is that I'm not teaching my kids anything. Like I'm teaching them life lessons, but I'm not like teaching them school. Like that's not my thing. I'm not good at it. Don't have the patience for it. Ain't gonna happen.
So how old are your kids, though? We're not talking about high schoolers.
No, they're 5 and 3.
Yeah, okay.
And I also, like, work during the day. My wife is a nurse, not at the hospital, but she works during the day. So I told our friend, who's an elementary school teacher, said, look, when school's closed, we're hiring you. So my contribution to this quarantine time is that I hired Sandy to teach my kids during the day.
Okay.
So things, you know, now, it's, like I said, very worth it.
I think that's great. I mean, that means you are valuing your children's educations. You're not spending your money on something frivolous.
And Alex is doing a great job, by the way. Alex has been learning a lot. My little 3-year-old is like not much for a douche, just like prances around the house all day and just and watches the people doing the pool in the backyard. I would give myself high grade for this too. Her friend has been living with us basically since March 8th.
This is the teacher's friend.
No. This is no. Sandy goes back and forth between her house every day.
Okay.
My wife's best friend came visit from California March 8th. She has not left.
Whoa.
And I have been totally cool with it. Like in the past, you know, she stays like longer than 2 weeks. I'm like, I kind of want like some me and you time, babe. Like it's about time to like your friend to leave. But it's actually been very helpful. Because it just gives her someone else to hang out with that's not me.
I'm hearing patience. I'm hearing poise.
So I would say that I have been very, I've been great in the quarantine. Also, I let her like indulge herself with fun activities. So example, this weekend, we're doing a prom in our house.
Okay, so, great.
We're dressing up and I have a tux. I'm wearing my tux. My wife is wearing an 11-year-old dress that I don't think fits her quite well.
Okay.
And we're going to play corny music and we have balloons that she blew up already. And we're going to have a prom in our living room, probably at 9 p.m. Eastern on Saturday night. We're going to have a Zoom link if people want to join us. Just indulging her in like, it's super, like we had a fiesta one weekend. We bought a pinata off Amazon and like made tacos and hit a pinata, like just indulging her in her little need to have fun moments.
What I'm hearing is nonstop motor from this creativity.
Her, not for me. I'm just like, I just say yes, babe.
Oh, great.
She is nonstop. Like she, and she likes to clean, which is great for me. So like, she'll just get in this like cleaning thing where like, she'll just clean for like 3 hours straight.
I'm hearing great teammate. I'm hearing great locker room presence. You're a culture guy.
All of that, yeah. Great culture. I'm always been a great culture guy. That's how I made it in the NFL. Great culture guy.
What needs improvement What needs, if you could grade yourself down for anything, if you said, okay, to be the best Jeff that I could be in this household, I need to improve X, Y, and Z for sure.
It's the same. It's the same two things that have haunted me during this marriage.
Mystery smells,
cleaning the kitchen, and folding of laundry.
Oh, okay.
Been a big deal.
Can I tell you? Issue. Do you own AirPods?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not. They don't pay us, so this is just completely unsolicited advertising from me. Chores are made so much better listening to podcasts on AirPods, because it's tough when a wire gets in the way if you're loading a dishwasher or something like that. Find a podcast you really like. Maybe it's The Solid Verbal. I don't know. Maybe it's Sports Wars. Find a podcast you love and only let yourself listen to it while you do the dishes, while you clean the kitchen, while you fold laundry.
That's what my wife does. She has books on tape.
Yeah.
She listens to them. And I caught her smiling the other day during a book on tape. She's just like, was sitting there. I'm like, what happened? And she said, the husband just got shot. And I was like, oh God. I'm like, oh no. Why are you smiling at this?
How are you sleeping?
Oh my God. Jeez. Whew. So, dude, we're getting by, man. We're fortunate.
Okay.
We've had a couple like, weekend bonfires. We invite our neighbors over. We just sit 6 feet apart in the driveway just have like a little bonfire action. Mm-hmm. We've made it work as best as possible. Look, I feel like we're getting sports back soon enough. I feel pretty confident in college football, maybe everywhere but California. And NFL's happening, so we'll have something to talk about in a couple months, hopefully.
What has been the best thing you've cooked, especially as it relates to good leftover meals, if such a thing exists in your household?
Yeah, I don't get leftovers very often. I did a rack of lamb in the sous vide. That was pretty good.
Okay.
I did soft shell crabs one day.
In like a sandwich, just with sauce? Like,
I fried them and then had a little sauce with them.
Mm-hmm.
I did beef short ribs as well. The thing with cooking is the hard part with the two kids is that I'm basically cooking for myself, because I'm not giving my kids like beef short rib. And so then I have to make my kids dinner.
Because you don't think they should be eating it for health reasons, or because you want more for you?
I don't care what they eat. But like, okay. my kids eat like they're five and they're eating bone in ribeyes. I just feel like that's not... go eat chicken nuggets. You know what I mean? Like, just that's not right.
I like the idea of your kids ordering uni and just having like a very sophisticated sushi palate at 5 and 3.
We take them to sushi a bunch when we were allowed to go out to dinner, and we try to get them to eat sushi. They wouldn't do it.
Okay. That's at least good. It's pricey.
Is uni the egg?
Uni, I think, is the sea urchin. Like the yellowy.
Yeah,
the
yeah, the sea urchin.
Salty, but delicious.
It's good?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
food. There was a day me and you went to eat in New York City. We had two lunches back to back.
Yeah. I tell people this, I tell them it's not unusual.
We went to ramen, and then we were like, we're still hungry. We walked out, like, $2, got two tacos.
It was great. I recommend Bang Bangs to everybody.
It was really good. Yeah. And by the way, our friend Matt Ford,
mm-hmm.
he loves me because I share the greatest story of all time, where Bill Barnwell, friend of Everwood program.
Yeah, of course.
Back when I didn't have access to stats, mm-hmm. I'd just text Bill and Bill would just provide me with said stat. And Matt loved that Bill was able to help me out with stats. He's like, you're a pro athlete and you just texted Bill for stats. I said, yeah, I don't have anywhere to get stats. So Bill was very helpful to run, and Matt thinks it's the best thing of all time.
Bill's the best. Just to know you, is there are just circumstances. Like, we went to a Christmas party a couple years ago now, and you showed up having shopped at a department store with like 14 pairs of shoes for your children. I don't know anybody else that does that. You were sweaty and carrying a garbage bag full of discount shoes for your kids.
I forgot about that. I went to Nordstrom Rack. It was like a mile and a half from the hotel. I forgot about that.
I was listening to your podcast, and I love all the Jeff details are great. I was listening to your podcast that you do with Matt. He's a former producer at Good Morning Football and the Katie Nolan Show. He's great. And Gabe Goodwin, and you told a story about how you like EDM, you just don't like dancing and standing. And you would like to go to an EDM festival if you could just sit somewhere on the side of the stage and enjoy the music. No drugs, no dancing, big, nasty bass.
Like, yes, like the other day we were sitting there. I have a video posted on my Twitter, at Jeff Schwartz, and my kids dancing to like Borges. Like, I don't know. It was just on in their house. So we listened to the house, and I like listening to the music. I don't want to dance. I mean, I'll dance a little bit, but like 45 minutes, my back has had enough. I just want to be able to sit and just enjoy the music and let my wife and her friends dance and just have fun.
You're out on one of the three letters that make up the term EDM. You're out on D.
Yes. And, yeah, I'm out on that. And look, yeah, I don't drink and I don't do drugs, obviously. So I just would be sober, like 3 a.m. at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, listening to Tiesto with his new music for the year. And just raving out, I guess, in my chair by myself.
The other story I tell people is when you were still an active NFL player, you were on, I think, a high protein diet, and yes, you went and got what's called street meat in New York with my brother when we were all at SB Nation. And my brother wolfs down food. He's disgusting. He goes and he eats a Chipotle burrito in like a 6 bites or something. And you guys went out and got street meat. Alex, my brother, came back almost ghost-faced and said, Jeff ordered double meat and he finished it before we even got back to the office. He had never seen that sort of display of athleticism, and it sticks with me to this day. You're just an athlete that people don't realize.
I wish you could eat like that still. Oh, yikes. Whew, that'd be rough on the old belly. Oh man, yes, you got street meat. I've been a New Yorker forever. Street meat is my jam. I can't, if I had some Hillel Brothers now, I'd just be in the potty. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's rough.
Do you find yourself, now that you have a kid of your own, mm-hmm, using kid terms for like adult things? Like, I just call it a potty now, 24/7.
Do you? Like, no, my kid doesn't really speak yet. He's not potty trained. So that specifically, I don't do. I do find myself, there are times where, like, I'll say to my wife, like, oh, did you get him a Baba for his bottle? And you're like, oh, maybe we should speak English as adults. Maybe we should save this one saving grace of, you know, when we're not in front of our kid, to just speak English. There are times where I do that. Absolutely.
Now my son is kind of reading now. So he can listen to us spell out words and he kind of, mm-hmm, knows what they are now. And he's like, Daddy, I know what you said. I'm like, sure, Alex, just, I don't need to know that.
Time to learn Spanish or Mandarin.
My wife and I actually thought about doing like a Rosetta Stone type thing, mm-hmm, and doing exactly that. Like, just taking like a month and learning another language, just we talk in front of our kids.
And you know what? They'll probably pick it up. They're sponges. So in reality, you're teaching them at the same time.
They are sponges.
All right. That's all the time we have, mostly because I'm hungry. I need to eat. And I'm sure you're hungry too. So everybody, thank you for listening. Listen to Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. Listen to it. Were you on Fox Sports Radio?
Yeah, I do some Fox Sports, but I mostly do the Pac-12 show on SiriusXM.
Yes.
6 to 9 Eastern. Now, we're kind of podcast forming it right now, but still out at 6 o'clock every night, Monday through Friday.
Follow him on Instagram. Follow him on Twitter. And by all means, just enjoy the Jeff Schwartz experience as everybody else does. Jeff, thank you very much for your time and continued luck in the household.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Same to you guys.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.